Well, we've got William Henry and we've got you this hour. We're going to take phone calls with William Henry in a moment right here on Coast to Coast AM. Hey, William, when you were a little boy, were you interested in this kind of material?
No, I wasn't. You know, I grew up in the Detroit area. My whole emphasis, my focus was on sports and music. I played a lot of baseball, a lot of football, played a lot of guitar. But then, you know, it was kind of funny because when I was in my 30s, I came home one day with a piece of Moldavite, this rock. They call it the windshield of a UFO because it's green and you can see through it. It was actually from a meteorite that crashed in Moldavia. My mom asked, "Is that from Idaho?" And I said, no, it's from Moldavia. Why do you ask? And she said, well, don't you remember when you were 10 or so, we went out to the Craters of the Moon National Park and you made your father pull over so you could go stand out in the middle of this volcanic field. And we looked at you at that moment going, you know, what's up with our kid? Why does he want to go out and stand out in the middle of this volcano? And so, I don't know. It's one of those things. But no, growing up, it was all about sports and music for me.
When did you leave Detroit? What year?
I left in 1982.
You left in 82. I left in 78. I went to Minneapolis for a year, then St. Louis, and now I bop all over the place.
But right.
Great town, great hometown, too.
Yeah, it is. It's a great hometown, and I'm really hoping that they come up with the out-of-the-box solution that's going to revive Detroit. It's really sad what's happened there. It can happen anywhere is the thing. And
I also hope they come up with a solution to revive the Detroit Lions.
Oh, yeah, right. Now, that's a miracle. That could be one of the miracles of 2012.
It probably could be. You know, as we approach 2012, and, everybody has a theory, William. Everybody has a theory. I also still think, though, there's going to be some kind of solar event, some kind of tie-in to the sun. Maybe an X flare. You know, that's what I've said. I've gone on record as saying that. I think the Mayans were adept at astronomy. Something's going on there. Would you consider possibly that too?
Oh, this goes to what we were saying just before the break, George, about the sun, INRI, being a source of a vibration, and of course, the idea is that it's emanates from the center of the Milky Way galaxy and then gets stepped down through our sun. And so I totally agree with you that any kind of vibration, solar flare, something like that activity would, on one level, could be disastrous. But yet on another level, it could be an opportunity for us to bathe ourselves in this higher vibration or higher frequency if we're so prepared. If we're not, as I said, it's going to be a bad hair day. And it could certainly be a bad hair day, technologically speaking. But at the spiritual level, I do believe the ancients are telling us you want to become one with the sun. The sun is the way and the truth and the light. The way to heaven is through the sun. And the sun is the gate or sun tunnel or star tunnel that links us to the center of the galaxy. And in my Soul Rising presentation, I spend a lot of time on the idea of Pentecost, which is really fascinating, George, because the Christian images of Pentecost, which happened 50 days after Jesus' ascension, you see this fire frequency or vibration coming down from the heavenly realms, probably the center of the galaxy, symbolized by the dove, often a radiant dove, entering into the crown or crown chakras of the disciples who are gathered in the upper room. And it shows them with flames coming out of the top of their heads. And I look at this and say, well, these Christian depictions of Pentecost, of this higher energy of the Holy Spirit, this cosmic energy coming through the sun or from the sun, Jesus, in the Christian perspective, these depictions exactly match what the ancient Egyptians were showing when Akhenaten and Nefertiti were aligned up with the Aten disk, the light that illuminates the sun. And we know for a fact that the Essenes were huge researchers of the revelation of Akhenaten and Nefertiti, and I believe what they possessed, George, was a technique, a spiritual technology that opened their consciousness to this higher frequency or vibration coming from the center of the galaxy that is called the Holy Spirit, is symbolized by the dove, but is in fact a cosmic energy that can awaken our consciousness if we're attuned to it. Mary. John the Baptist, but the brother of Jesus, James, Mary Magdalene, Jesus's other family members, were these disciples gathered in the upper room who knew how to do this? And this is something I'm attempting to find out, is what was it that they did? How did he attune their consciousness so that they could receive this fire frequency or vibration called the Holy Spirit?
All right, back to the phones we go. First time caller, Wesley, truck driving in Texas. You're up. Hey, Wesley, go ahead.
Hey, what's up?
Hi, good to have you with. Turn your radio down and go ahead.
Yeah, I just did.
Okay, thanks.
Make a long story short, George. I called here a while back. Me and my father was on the going down an old country road, and I called about. I was asking, you had two ladies guests in there, and I believe they were talking about magic or something like that.
Okay.
And I'm sure you've slept since then, but just to give William, you know, touch base with him real fast in a hurry, we were going down the road, and it looked like a car was on the side of the road. It looked like two headlights were really, 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 really bright. And the closer we got to it, the brighter it was. But when we finally got up on it, it was on a bridge, and it was two things glowing like light bulbs, exactly like you explained it. That is the first time I've ever heard anybody. I can picture it in my mind, and it just gives me chills. It was beautiful, but scary at the same time. Like when people, you know, when they say, you know, shadow people, I see shadow people. They're 6 feet tall, and they have like a veil on them. Well, that's what it looked like. It looked like a person with a veil, like a robe type form, but they were glowing. And that's wow. The first time I've ever heard anybody say that, you know. So I was wondering, you have a question I had for you. Is, I have two questions for you. One is about the picture. I believe you said that you had somebody had like a Kodak picture. I was wondering if there's any way that you could put that up somewhere so I could look at it to kind of visualize and see if that's what I saw. And my other question for you is kind of like the shadow people. You know, they say shadow people feed off of negative energy, like fighting and stuff like that. Well, what would the glowing people, I guess you could say, or the rainbow effect creatures, what would they feed off of? I guess that's my questions I have for you. And, George, I love the show.
All right. Thanks, Wesley. Go ahead.
Okay, yeah, I'll ask my friend who gave me that photo if I can post it on my website, and I'll of course send it on to Coast to Coast as well. And I think what he's describing here, it could be some of these transfigured beings who are wearing this cloak of illumination, this robe of light, this shroud. He described it as a veil of light that they're wearing, almost like they're wearing this bright white clothing. I'm on my website in the About William Henry section. I have a painting by Fra Angelico from Florence, Italy, that shows Jesus wearing the cloak of light. And I would imagine that if the caller were to visit my website and look at that image, he would resonate with what he's seen there and be probably strikingly similar to what he saw.
You know, William, if the Shroud of Turin is legitimate, and I have reason to believe it is, it would explain this glow, this pulse of energy, don't you
think?
That's
right. You know, absolutely. I mean, that's the perspective, is that this is a relic of Jesus's ascension, or excuse me, his resurrection, in which he pulses into this being of light, this uniform, radiant being of light. And now what I've been tracking is like, okay, well, what does he do after that event? Does he simply sit on his throne? No. According to at least the story of St. Francis, for one, he manifests in our world. And when he manifests, he's appearing as a seraphim, as one of these winged or fiery serpents. And while he was talking, George, I was recalling, remember that that press conference they had in D.C. a couple of months ago with those Air Force officers?
Absolutely. We had them on right before the event, the ones about the missile silo.
The missiles, right. I had a friend that was actually at that press conference, and he had the same thought that I did when I heard their description. In one instance, they described an orangish-red oval of light that disabled the nuclear missile. Well, that's exactly the description of the seraphim. They are the fiery angels. They're portrayed, especially in the case of Jesus as the seraphim, he's portrayed as fiery reddish orange. And I'm thinking, well, that's exactly the business the seraphim would be about, disabling nuclear missile silos. So something to ponder there.
Text message in. Mandy from Richmond, Virginia wants to know if the Knights Templar were good or evil people.
Well, within any organization, you're going to have some that are good, some that are not so good, and organizations do get sort of hijacked in a way. I think their intention was true. I think it was benevolent. I think that when the original nine French knights went into Jerusalem underneath the Temple of Solomon seeking these secrets, they're looking for the ultimate ancient secrets, the secrets of Jesus and how he transformed into a being of light. How do we resurrect from the dead? And, I mean, I read these various people's perspectives on the Knights Templar and how they're an evil organization, controlling organization, and I just don't get it. I think that, you know, we want to go back and look at the original documents and the original intent of these people, not what somebody with kind of an axe to grind has to say about it. I think you have to be very careful at people that automatically want to paint with a really wide brush saying all the Knights Templar are evil. Every Freemason is evil. I simply don't go along with that.
Okay, next up, we go to Huntington Beach, California on the wildcard line. Hi, Danielle. Go ahead. Danielle? Will?
Hi.
Well, there she is, but let's see if we can resurrect her. You still there?
Yeah, I'm here. Do you hear me?
Okay. Yep, go ahead.
So basically, last year, I had a near-death experience. I was 28 years old. It happened in August of 25th, and I had a craniotomy. I had a car accident.
Wow.
It took me to UCI, and my physical being was in Orange County, and I awoke. And I was in white sand, the beaches, I believe, that were in Mexico. I had women around me, shaman women, native, and they told me, they kept repeating the great return of the devourer. They told me of the downfall of Christianity and that this world will be basically inflamed. They told me many things to get out of the city, and they kept saying the devourer. I've recently been deciphering that information and linked it up to Egyptian text, mm-hmm. basically. And I've had many different out-of-body experiences since my birth. And it's funny that you were talking to the Anunnaki, but I have had a out-of-body experience once, and I had seen a serpent. It was in a gray form with the head of a basic gray, but it was very huge. And it had green eyes, and it spoke. It was neither male nor female. And it spoke that we are as ants, that we basically set out our path as ants, but we are favored. I don't believe in the two brothers theory. I do feel connected somehow, like as the gentleman was saying, the serpent was basically withheld as within the Christian text. I do feel like there is somehow our true self, our true capabilities have been withheld for us. Through control. But my main question is I'm also linking up with many, as I call them, ancient ones or old souls now. And my main question is, what is your take on my near-death experience? I've talked to an anthropologist, and my friend Mel told me to call the show today, and perhaps I would be able to get enlightened on the subject of the devourer. They told mm-hmm. me the return of the devourer over mm-hmm. and over again.
Yeah, in ancient Egypt, they do talk about the devourer of souls. He's called Amut, and he's actually portrayed as one-third crocodile, a third lion, and a third hippopotamus. Now, you know, we could focus on him and say he's a reptilian, or he's simply a hybrid being. And the idea is that this devourer of souls shows up in the Judgment Day scenes. And in the Judgment Day scene in ancient Egypt, which, by the way, in the Christian tradition, Judgment Day is Revelation, Book of Revelation, chapter 20, verse 12, showing God's got a real sense of humor. Revelation 20:12 is the end of the world in the Christian tradition. But what happens in Judgment Day in ancient Egypt is that this is when the heart is weighed against the feather of Mott, of cosmic truth. And what they want to know is, how lighthearted of a person are you? If your heart weighs less than the feather, then the soul continues on its spiral of evolution. If not, then the devourer of souls is waiting there. It's sort of like a recycling program. It's back to diapers. If you haven't done your spiritual work, if you haven't achieved the state of lightheartedness, we get to do this all over again until we do achieve that state of awakened consciousness and awakened heart.
All right, very good. Next up, Patrick's in Bullhead City, Arizona. Patrick, thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Hi, guys. Pleasure to talk to you.
You too.
Two questions, and if I got time, a little comment. William, do you think that the reptilian, you know, how kind of you're talking about our ascension to light, do you think it's possible that they have like a class like we are at now, and then the seraphim advanced to light, and then maybe all these bad reptilians are the ones that have never evolved up into the higher life forms?
That's a possibility. They could be the failed ones who didn't matriculate, right? Because, again, the traditions that I'm researching say that humans can become angels. Humans, such as Enoch, can transform into Metatron, an archangel, and Metatron is also considered a seraphim. And so you would have to, from that, might be able to gather that, yeah, there are a group of beings that couldn't make the cut, they couldn't do it, and so then what do? Well, they demonize these teachings and prevent others from following through on it.
Because Quetamutri, I've followed a little bit of his teachings as far as his stuff. I don't know if you know about him. He's that African shaman. But he
right.
talks about how, yeah, the Anunnaki used to live on the earth a long time ago, and they used to live mm-hmm. in this perfect society and stuff, and then they got outcast or whatever. But anyways, my second thought is you were talking earlier about how they might, Obama might disclose the aliens. And do you think possibly that, I've heard a lot of other things like the how they might just try to set it up and as a decoy to like
sure Project Blue
like
Beam.
when they come down like to say yeah like when they might be coming here to give a genuinely good positive message, but they might try to set us up as they might be tricksters and you know something like to that along those lines.
Yeah, my hope with disclosure is that we're going to leapfrog the lower technological extraterrestrials, the ones that are not too far in advance from where we're at, technologically speaking, right now. I think it's fascinating that the Dalai Lama is coming to Washington, D.C. in July to do the Kala Chakra initiation at the Verizon Center, thousands of people. This is the initiation that puts us on the path to Buddhahood. This is the initiation that puts us on the path to achieving the rainbow body. And I see these pictures of him, of the Dalai Lama standing in front of the U.S. Capitol, and there's talk that they're trying to get me to give him a tour of the Capitol, which I would love to do, to show him the correspondence of Washington on the rainbow with the Tibetan Lamas on the rainbow of achieve the rainbow body. But my point is that my hope out of all this is that what if the Dalai Lama comes to D.C. at that time when this disclosure talk is certainly going to be even more accelerated as we get closer to 2012, and what we do is we leapfrog the lower technological version of it, the guys that are flying around on these clunky spaceships, and instead show a manifestation of a holy being like a return of a Buddha, a return of a Quetzalcoatl. Carl Callahan says 2012 is going to happen in 2011. And if Mivan prophecy centers on the return of the feathered serpent, the return of the seraphim, the return of the rainbow body beings, this unites all the world's religions. And that, to me, would be the ultimate disclosure. That's the one that I'm kind of keeping an eye on, saying, I think it's going to go in this direction, guys, and we're going to leave behind these lower guys that are just going to have to, they won't be able to handle it. Those have to leave.
We're going to come back and take final phone calls with William Henry in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. We'll be right back. Well, Halloween has come and gone, but that doesn't mean we're not talking about ghosts on the program. Our next program, Ghosts and Hauntings, get ready for that. And when we come back with William Henry, let's take some final phone calls. Those of you out there in Casper, Wyoming, Miami, New Orleans, Ontario, Canada, Fort Myers, Butte, Montana, Warren, Michigan, I know that well. Back in a moment. Coast to Coast AM. Where are you going to be December 21st, 2012, William?
We'll see. I'm possibly here in Nashville. I haven't made my plans yet.
Not going to hide in a hole or anything, are you?
No, not going to hide in a hole. No, but looking forward to it. Things are about to get really exciting, aren't they?
Yeah, we're into this time period. We really are. I think it's going to be one heck of a ride, but if those who hold on don't fall out, it should be pretty fun.
I expect things that are beyond our comprehension to start happening. And this is why I think each of us have to start thinking outside of the box and just saying, hey, everything's possible, and be willing to open up to new possibilities here.
Well, you know what? Regardless of what happens, whether you're right or I'm right or, you know, David Hatcher Childress is right, whoever, it's a moment that I think could be one of the greatest times in humankind, don't you think?
Oh, it's tremendously exciting. And, you know, to say nothing is going to happen, that doesn't make sense at all, because just look around our world. I talk incessantly about the wormholes, and Stargate consciousness is the next leap in evolution for us. And just look around our world at what's happening in films. Look at the artwork that's appearing in urban centers around the world. It's all telling us that the future is here. We're going to be okay. We're embracing a new consciousness, and it's coming online.
Indeed it is. Let's go to Elaine, Fort Myers, Florida, as promised. Go ahead, Elaine. Thanks for calling.
Hi, good morning.
Morning.
The thing that I'm wondering is, it's a two-point question, is that obviously in the Bible, the ultimate evil is the serpent with Adam and Eve. And so that's why we relate the serpents and all that to ultimate evil. And so that, you know, that's really obvious. And the other thing is what about the ancient dinosaurs that roamed the earth? I mean, do they have anything to do with these dinosaurs? Or are these reptilians, I should say, that have anything to do with these extraterrestrials?
Not to my knowledge, and I think it's just an opinion that the Serpent of Eden is the force of ultimate evil. I think you've got some people that are in the Bible text that are trying to control us by keeping us from achieving this ultimate awakening, ultimate enlightenment, which is what the Serpent of Wisdom denotes in the Old Testament, as I understand it. I mean, everybody is perfectly willing to look at that, the book of Genesis, and come to their own conclusions. And I hope that they would come to their own conclusion, not the conclusion of what some guy standing there is telling them to think. I hope that individuals will do their own research, and perhaps the caller has done that, and with all due respect, I hope that she has. But what I find is that people just kind of dismiss this out of hand because somebody told them to do this since they were 5 years old, and they never question, why is that? Let's go back and see what this is really all about. Why is it that only the Bible, only the Old Testament, is the only text in the world that denigrates the serpent, and you know what? It also denigrates women. Is there a connection between those two facts? I believe that there is, because in all of the ancient spiritual traditions, especially the ones based on the divine feminine, the serpent was an ally. The serpent symbolized life force energy called kundalini, and as you raised the serpent, as you lifted the kundalini energy within you, you awakened your consciousness. So to dismiss the serpent is to say, I prefer to keep my consciousness closed and to not achieve the awakened or enlightened state. And then we also come on and say, well, what have these people done to women throughout the intervening centuries? Well, they've done the same thing they've done to the serpent. They've demonized the feminine half of our race.
What's your take on the Garden of Eden, William?
I think it's the center of the Milky Way galaxy. I think that they're describing that the Eden is a place of pure light and pure love. And using the as above, so below formula, yeah, there probably was a place somewhere in the Middle East, maybe in ancient Iraq, maybe ancient Iran, where humankind originated. But the place that the mystic tradition points to is the center of the Milky Way galaxy, is the place of light and love from which we originated. And what I always encourage people to remember about the Garden of Eden story is that it was Yahweh, the Old Testament God, that evicted us from Eden. And when we were evicted from Eden, this place of pure light and pure love, Yahweh or Jehovah created a gate at the east of Eden and placed cherubim on either side of that gate and forbade us to return. And a second thing that he did that most people forget about is that Jehovah made coats of skin for Adam and Eve as he sent them out of the Garden of Eden. This suggests to me that our original state, once we were in that pure place, that Eden place, is we were light beings. And in a sense, you can think of the human body, the skin suit, is sort of like the orange jumpsuits that prisoners wear. And they identify with the orange jumpsuits. They become that, and they don't realize that they can escape that prison. They escape the prison by awakening their consciousness, by transforming, by metamorphosing into higher beings. And that's what this is really all about.
Next up, we go to Casper, Wyoming. It's Jamie's turn. Go ahead, Jamie.
Hi, guys. A few months ago, I saw these things in church buzzing around the people that were dancing and singing and worshiping and stuff. And I drew a picture of them, and they looked like big butterflies with tails. And I asked, I prayed, and I asked my spiritual friend Mordecai, I told you about him one time, George.
Right, right.
And they said that they were gift bearers. So I was wondering if, other than this picture of the saint receiving the marks from Jesus, if there's any other traditions of the seraphim or the winged serpents having butterfly wings. Thank you.
All right, thank you. What do you think?
Yeah, that's a very good question, because, of course, the butterfly is the symbol of metamorphosis and transformation itself. And as I mentioned earlier, we're all in a pupil form here in the human body. We're seeking to become the metamorphosed human, which is symbolized by the butterfly. Do I know of any actual beings that have butterfly wings? No, I haven't seen that. But whenever you see the butterfly, it is a symbol of transformation and metamorphosis.
All right, it's Miami's turn. We go to Bob. Go ahead, Bob.
Hello, Pat.
Hi. Thanks for calling, Bob.
Hey,
go ahead.
My name is George. William. Okay. I'm going to the book of Genesis. The first page, first three lines. I just wanted to get his translation of this. Okay?
All right. William, in Genesis, of course. What do you think?
I'm sorry, what's the question?
Well, he's talking about the first three lines of Genesis, of course.
In the beginning, God created?
Mm-hmm.
Is this what we're talking about?
Yes.
And you want me to comment on that?
Sure, please.
Oh, yeah, very fascinating. A scholarly argument has always gone about that. Is the first word in Hebrew is bereshit, and the scholarly argument is does that word mean in the beginning or in a beginning? There's a huge difference between the two, and it seems that in part what it's describing there is a new chapter opening in human affairs, and it's fascinating to contemplate that, because it suggests that there was another world before the creation of this world. And, of course, now today, modern physics is all about that, saying that there have been perhaps many creations, that we live in a bubble universe within a bubble universe. And it's just fascinating to me.
You know, the fallen angels, that whole story fascinates me as well. Something obviously happened,
mm-hmm.
whether they were ETs that came down here or true angels who became evil, I don't know, but something dramatic happened a long, long time ago, didn't it?
Without a doubt, and at the core of it, in my view, I mean, based on the evidence of the research that I've been doing, there has been an effort since the beginning, the opening of this chapter, to deprive humankind of necessary knowledge and to make us a subservient race. And what I've been about in my research is trying to figure out what is that knowledge and how can we embrace that. And what this knowledge is about is how we transform ourselves into light beings, God beings, or glorified beings. And the faction that seems to want to control things on this planet is the one that says, you are in no way entitled to do that. And that, to me, is a negative scenario. And I'm seeking to overcome that personally. I think a lot of people are seeking that. This is why they get frustrated with the church, because the church is always telling them what they can't do rather than what they can do. And unfortunately, there's not a single Christian church that I'm aware of that is teaching how we can transform ourselves into beings of light. Yet that's what Jesus's message was directly all about.
Okay, next up, we go to Mary in Ontario, Canada. Hey, Mary, go ahead. Mary? Well, it would help if I hit the button. Go ahead, Mary.
Hi, George.
Hi.
You know how you reported not too long ago that in China they had a cat that was growing wings on its side? Well, like, today we're working with all this transgender stuff with mixing humans with animals, and how we have all these underground cities. And I believe that we obtained this very same level of technology years before the Great Flood, and we screwed up the planet, and you know, we blew it. And, all the enlightened, after we did that, there was all these enlightened people underground. And I believe that the fallen angels were actually astronauts that were coming back to our planet. And after years, there was all these people, you know, just that were not from underground, did not have any technology, and they looked upon them as angels and gods. And I read a book called The Search for Angels, and if you know, the first angels were seen coming down from a mountain. They were tall men. They were really, you know, white skin, and they had long hair, white, and long beards. And I believe that they were astronauts, and there were, you know, enlightened beings, and there were all these other people that didn't have a clue what was going on.
What do you think of that theory, William? Let's get his take.
Well, this goes back to Enoch, who we discussed earlier, who was taken up into heaven as the sole pure example of this pre-flood civilization that she's describing. Enoch was taken because he was a master of this esoteric lore. He was pure-hearted, and as a result of that, he's taken up into heaven and transformed into the archangel Metatron, whom some claim is actually a seraphim. So I think that there was an effort on behalf of whoever this being was, in this case the archangel Michael and whoever he was working under, to save an element of humankind that perhaps we did misuse technology, as so many people believe. Perhaps we're in the midst of doing that now. And by the model of Enoch, I would say that the place we want to focus our energy and emotion and time is how we transform ourselves into these glorious light beings rather than the technology. This is the way out.
Before we go back to final calls, take just a moment to tell us what's new on WilliamHenry.net and also Soul Rising.
Oh, thank you very much, George. Yeah, I'm introducing the new iteration of my website, WilliamHenry.net, which features Soul Rising and my new DVD set, The Awakening, The Transformation, The Ascension. It's largely artwork-driven, George, because the belief here is that the secrets of the light body, of the rainbow body, are transmitted not in writing, but through artwork. The belief is that this artwork itself can transmit this energy and these secrets. So I've got perhaps the world's largest collection of this rainbow body art and transfiguration art included in this presentation. And people that have seen it live and also on the DVD are telling me that it literally lights them up. It does transmit this energy. And I'm thrilled to offer that to people as a DVD set and also as an 11x17 book of frameable art.
Good for you. What do you prefer, DVDs or books? You have fun doing both.
I love DVDs. I thoroughly enjoy them. I mean, one of the best favorite things that I get to do is to interact with audiences and share this with people and see the expressions on their faces as this artwork lights them up and transforms them. People still want books, but more and more I see the DVD as the vehicle of the future.
Thomas is in Warren, Michigan, first-time caller. Hey, Thomas, go ahead.
Hi, how are you guys doing tonight?
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, my question has to do with all the illustrations and artwork that you have researched. These guys who did the artwork didn't obviously live in the same time period, and if they did, they couldn't possibly talk to each other. Have you looked at the origins of, say, where did they come up with the concept, if there's anything in common with the illustrators themselves?
Ancient artwork and the illustrations. Go ahead, William.
Yes, some of the icons of especially the Transfiguration of Jesus are considered to be contemporary representations. You're right. There were eyewitness accounts to these events, but there are no photographs. So we are dealing with artistic interpretations that are strikingly consistent across the ages and across different cultures. And that's what fascinates me. In other words, the way the Tibetans show this is the same way the Christians show it. So they must be either A, copying each other, or B, pulling from the same kind of source code. And the longer I look at this, the more I think that these artists are, people like to use the word channeling, that might be a right way, but they're tapping into this cosmic artistic code and pulling down this imagery, and that explains the consistency of this imagery to me.
Next up, we go to Mike in Butte, Montana. We'll squeeze you in here. Mike, go ahead.
Hey, yeah. Hi, George. Great show.
Thank you.
I wondered what your guest thought of the symbology of the Arubis. I hope I pronounced that right. And then I wanted to ask him, too, if he'd ever run across in Brad Steiger's book, that Atlantis Rising, the Oxo prophecy from that Robin McPherson in British Columbia.
And then Casey speaks to the Elaine Vital, and that all matter is just electrical, spiritual in nature. So, is, you know, how does that relate to, like, quantum theory and string theory? What's
all right. Take your pick, William. Minute to go.
Ah, boy. Good question. I just feel we inhabit a very small spectrum of all that is. And to think that we are all that is just not a workable scenario. And what this is all about is us expanding our minds, expanding our hearts to embrace and become more full spectrum beings. And that's what I feel that this rainbow body tradition is all about. It's enhancing human capability. It's embracing our full capabilities and just widening our perspective, being able to feed our imagination with this imagery actually feeds the light body and will help us to widen our perspective and become more full spectrum beings as electrical beings, as spiritual beings.
So, William, over the next course of the year and a half to 2 years, we're going to be okay?
I think we're going to be okay. I think it's going to be a bumpy ride. Buckle up is my advice to everybody.
Don't fall out, right?
Yeah, get in alignment with your higher self, your true self. Speak truth. Speak your truth. Act in as righteous and godly way as you possibly can. We're standing in front of the throne of God. Let's start acting that way, and everything will be okay.
Are you bringing the new wife, Claire, to the conscious life?
Yes, I am.
All right, I get a chance to meet her then. William, you take care of yourself. William Henry, for Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Laudasur, Stephanie Smith, Ross Mitchell, George Nappy, and Punnett and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safer.